Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hi guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode 16, The Ring. And I gotta say, this is always one of those episodes where I kind of forget about it and then we get to it and I'm like, oh yeah, this is in season one, because it feels so different than the rest of the season in that like Angel is in captivity and we're not really focused on Angel investigations so much as we are in Angel and these random group of demons. And it feels very disconnected from the rest of the world of Angel in some ways. But I gotta say, I enjoy this episode. What do you think, Leia?
Yeah. This is actually like a standout episode for me from season one. Like when I think of season one, this is one of the episodes that comes to mind.
Interesting.
I don't know why specifically. Maybe just when I watched it when I was younger, it just kind of stuck in my mind for some reason.
It's because Angel's wearing a tank top. That's why. You're always like, I don't know why. I'm like, Leia.
Imprinted in my brain. Very possible, like 98% chance that that's the reason why.
Yep. I believe it.
But no, I really enjoyed this episode. I think it showcases like how good of a team Wesley and Cordelia make, even when they're bickering. And it's just such a good episode for them. It's also a really good like subverting the expectation episode that, you know, this whole universe is like huge on, you know, the demons are the ones being saved once again, mm-hmm. like we saw in I've Got You Under My Skin. I mean, this is like a repeated theme, especially on Angel's show. On Buffy, it's like, you know, the helpless looking girl is the one that beats the demons. Whereas on Angel, it's like the demons aren't always the bad guys. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool that we're seeing like this repeated theme here and like this subversion again and again. So yeah, I love this episode actually. One of my faves from this season.
Yeah, it's so funny because I like looking up my reviews as I normally do just to kind of get a feel around every single
person. Everyone hates it.
No, actually not.
What?
Actually, every single person was like, you know, this is a filler episode. This episode kind of it doesn't do much for the overall arc other than, you know, okay, Wolferman Hart is here again. We meet Lila. But every single person was either like, this was my candy episode. This is in like one of my top 10 episodes of the series. And even though it's cliche, I absolutely adore this. Like everyone loved this episode. And
yeah,
I gotta say, there's a charm to it. And I really think mm-hmm. it's because of the way that Wes, Cordelia, and Angel carry this episode with their charm and the way they work together. It is fun to watch and it makes it enjoyable. And that's when you know that your show is doing well, because you can have an episode that maybe is not as flashy or maybe doesn't have the tightest metaphor or themes or whatever it is, but your characters are good. And so you watch it for that and that makes it worth it.
Right. I think what, you know, season one is, it's a bit different than any other season of like both shows, season one of Angel, because there's no big bad that we're like waiting for to the end of the season. Because like yeah. on Buffy, you know, there's like the Monster of the Week episodes, but in the background, there's something building. Like everyone knows that something's building and it's going to, you know, reach ahead at some point, and then Buffy's gonna face the big bad and it's gonna be in the last few episodes. Angel season one is really not like that. Like it's very much episodic. Like it's, there's not really an overarching like storyline in season mm-hmm. one. So I feel like a lot of the episodes are either being used to develop like the relationships at this point or just the individual characters, which I think this episode does like really well. especially for Wesley and Cordelia, because they do spend a lot of like individual time together, mm-hmm. Which we haven't seen yet, really. We've seen Angel and Wesley together and Cordelia and Angel a little bit together, but we haven't seen Wesley and Cordelia. So I think it does that really well. And I think that, you know, we're just like getting little bits and pieces of things here and there, which is why I think like we've been critical of some of the episodes where maybe character development isn't really like it was like trying to do character development, but didn't really work out. And that's mostly like for Cordelia, I feel like some of them for Angel too, like whatever. But I feel like just in general, like you wouldn't expect to watch an episode of season one Angel and be like, oh, this is a great episode that fits into the storyline of the season, because there really isn't one. So you just kind of have to take each episode as it comes.
I think that Angel season one has been doing a really great job of establishing the world and kind of making a really – I think the biggest thing that they've been trying to do is establish thematically that demons can also be good and humans can also be bad. And that's been a really prevalent theme this season. And the reason for that is because the main character is a demon, like Angel's technically a demon. So unlike on Buffy, where they very much established like the first three seasons of Buffy, where it was like demon bad, human good, like it was very black and white. And then it's obviously starting to deviate a little bit more in season four. They couldn't do that on Angel. So they had to very much be like, okay, well, we now need to establish that, like, that was kind of a very simplistic view. And I like that they had an easy out by saying, is the Watchers Council very narrow-minded view of the Watchers Council in thinking that demons can only be one thing. And that's passed on to Giles and then therefore passed on to Buffy. But as we've seen, even in season three, they started establishing that there are demons that are possibly not as bad as we think they are, that really are just kind of living their lives, doing whatever. And so here on Angel, I think it is so important that they kind of take that a step further and be like, wow, you can even have some demons that are good, some demons that can choose the right thing, because of how that reflects on your main character and on Angel. Mm-hmm. So it's so important. And I think it's so clever what the show is doing is like hammering that home and establishing that. And I think this is another episode that really kind of shows that in just another layer.
Yeah, I think it's like super fitting too, because Angel was the character that introduced the more morally gray aspect of like demon-ness over on Buffy, right? Like if it weren't for Angel, you know, Angel was the first good vampire that came onto the show that, you know, Buffy couldn't just kill right away because he was good. And then that led to, you know, the introduction of Oz, and he's a werewolf, and Willow started dating him. And then Anya started, like, got introduced into the mix. And, like, we started meeting other, like, demons that were kind of, you know, morally gray and not completely evil. So it's fitting that this character that brought the whole, like, moral ambiguity of to the Buffy universe now gets his own show. And, like, obviously his own show is not going to be black and white. Because Angel is not good or bad. I mean, he is good, but there's also like the duality of his character, which they have to address. They can't just like be like, oh, demons are terrible here too. Like that's not true.
So. Right. It just, it constantly amazes me as we have episodes like this and then thinking about what's happening over on Buffy season four with Riley struggling with this idea of demons and vampires and all that stuff. Not being as bad as he was taught. And I think it's so clever that the writers were like, there's going to be some people that are probably going to struggle with the fact that the lore is not what it used to be in season one. And they will probably relate with Riley in an attempt to try and like make Riley more relatable and stuff too. But also to kind of like allow Angel the series to like expand without it conflicting with what they've already built on Buffy. So it just, it's kind of neat how both shows, even if they're not directly correlating with each other, they have many things that you can see how it works back and forth. So, all right. So season one, episode 16, written by Howard Gordon. And just another reminder, guys, that don't always believe what you read online because it might be incorrect. So Buffyverse Wiki actually says that this episode is written by Tim Minear, but they lie They Lie. It was written by Howard Gordon, and it was directed by Nick Mark, not Bruce Seth Green, like Buffy vs. Wiki says. So always double and triple check your sources. Just another reminder. Howard Gordon wrote Expecting and Hero from this season, which is interesting because I feel like I can see the bits and pieces of the dynamic of like the really good dynamic from Expecting between like Wesley and Angel and even Cordelia to a certain extent. I can see how it like carried over into this episode. And then also with Hero, like there's some really great moments between Doyle and Angel. But I think this also kind of confirms one of my theories that I'm fairly certain this was one of the earlier scripts that they wrote and put like in a back box in a back room and was like, okay, at the very end of the season, if we need something, we're just going to pull out. And they grabbed Expecting and they grabbed this one out of there. Because I think when we did Expecting, we remembered that, or I think we were like hypothesizing that parts of the episode that were written for Wesley were probably written for Doyle. So my guess is that's the same with this episode as well. And they just kind of changed it around for Wesley. It kind of feels like certain aspects of this episode feel like it would have fit anywhere into the season. And so I find that like Go Fish and other episodes like that, that don't quite have to do with like any sort of main storyline or plot, but are just kind of filler, they will kind of grab out of a box and say, okay, this fits anywhere we want in the season. We're just going to use that. And yeah, so who knows? This episode was nominated for an Emmy Award for Outstanding Makeup for a Series, and boy, did it deserve it. Some of the makeup for these demons was phenomenal. It was so good. No, but I was especially impressed with I cannot remember what – the guy that had, like, the spine on his head. I can't remember his name. I'll remember in a minute. But he was yellow – yes, it was Trepkos. I really was impressed with how they made his skin. It looked like some sort of like amphibian type animal, but they made it translucent enough that it looked like actual skin and not just paint on skin. It was so good. I really liked watching it.
Great makeup in this episode. A lot of different demons, and I think that's why you don't usually see this many like different variations of demons in one episode. So it was pretty cool.
And like we talked about before, I think this episode is definitely filler, but it has some great moments. You finally have Wolfram and Hart appearing as a major player. Lila is here, and she is just a fantastic character. I can't wait to talk more about her.
Morgan. I love Lila.
She just is so fun to watch on screen. She's just delicious. I don't know how else to describe her.
Her and Angel have amazing chemistry on screen together. Like, you're just
Kate,
like,
who?
Excuse me, ma'am? What are you doing here?
Yes, I know. I can't wait to talk about that one scene. I have so much to say on that one.
It was getting kind of hot in there.
It was. It honestly really was. There have been some fantastic female characters on this show that have had really great chemistry with David Boreanaz, minus Kate. But you know what?
Hey, whatever. They have some chemistry. It's
you know, they do. It's not nothing. They do.
Yeah.
Sure. That's not what you want to hear between like a couple or a show's couple that they're possibly trying to push towards a romantic storyline. They have somewhat chemistry, you know, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
Throwing them a bone. Wesley and Cordelia are fantastic together, like we talked about. And as we mentioned before, Angel's in a white tank top. Like this episode just – it had the full package, man. Yeah. It was great.
I would even go as far as to say that like – I think so far, like, I love Angel and Cordelia's interactions, but I think my favorite person that Cordelia interacts with on the show is by far Wesley.
Mm-hmm.
They are just so funny together, so entertaining. They just work so well together, and they don't even try. It's like they're not even trying. They're actively working to not work well together, but somehow it just works amazingly because he's just such a big nerd and she's just like such a, I don't know, like she's so blunt, and they just bring out these like amazing sides of each other that are so petty and so like hilarious, and it's just a joy to watch them on screen together. But I think even like Alexis Denisoff has great chemistry with everybody that way. Like when him and David Boreanaz are on screen together too, there's just, he just brings out this like really humorous side of the other character because he plays things like very humorously without even trying. But yeah, I think my favorite like Cordelia dynamic right as of right now is when she's with Wesley, when she's paired up with Wesley. And I want to see more of that because it's just like gold.
I agree. And you know what? It wasn't until you said that that I think I figured out why that is. Because when they pair them together, they did that in She. They paired them together in Parting Gifts a little bit too. There's just like – there's been – you can see a steady buildup of them hanging out more together than with any other characters. And the reason why I think I like their dynamic more is – when Cordelia is paired with Angel or with other characters, the writers often resort to making her more dumb and
all having... about the other character.
Yes. When she's with Wesley, they have Wesley as kind of the, I say in quotations, the kind of the dumb character. He's not dumb, but he's insecure. So he makes a fool of himself. He falls over.
They both make a fool of themselves when they're together.
Right. But I feel like Cordelia's not stupid, and yeah. They often fall on stupid gags with her with other characters. What is that one? Oh, it was Somnambulist, where she was like, he's like, Cordelia, steak, and she's like, steak? It's 8 a.m. or whatever. And I was like, okay, like, right. She's not That's dumb. She knows what you're talking about. But when it's with Wesley, like, they have him fumbling with his tools and stuff like that, and Cordelia's over there like having to clean up after him a little bit, but she's so smart. And so I'm noticing, like, when they pair her with Wesley, they make her smart and they give her better stuff to do. And I'm like, yes, Cordelia's not stupid. And I don't like it when they write her stupid.
I think it's also like it brings out like her personality more. Whereas when she's like interacting with Angel, it's all about Angel. I feel like anytime they have any interactions, it's just like, she's just there to kind of be Angel's like sounding board, or like, she's talking to Angel about something that has to do with him, or like, you know what I mean? Where when she's with Wesley, like, you can just really see both of their personalities shining through, especially Cordelia, which I think is kind of ties into your thing where they kind of dumb her down in other dynamics. But then around Wesley, I feel like they're more on like equal footing where they're kind of both dumbed down, but it works.
Yes, but together they make like one really smart pair, you know?
Yeah.
Right. To combine our half of a brain cell, we have one whole brain cell. No, just kidding. Yeah. Smarter than that. But you know, like something like that. It really does. It kind of feels like that. Like they're both like this episode in particular. I was like, wow, with Angel out of the dynamic, they're figuring stuff out. They're doing like they're working together. I'm like, I'm genuinely impressed right now.
Yeah.
Okay. So Passion the Nerd is interesting because he was talking about how like this is his candy episode. He really likes it. But he was saying that he feels like on both Buffy and Angel, like they have shown that killing a human is a massive, massive deal. And it's a line that both characters won't cross. Or if they do cross, it's shown to be like horrendous. He said that this episode would have been more impactful if Angel had been forced to kill or fight humans versus other demons, simply because of the line that the shows have drawn. And he also says this episode, the humans are the villains, and they play off the moment where Angel kills the demons as like a really big moment. But we've seen him kill tons of demons before. And then at the very end of the episode, there's that realization that they just released a bunch of demons out into the world. Yeah. So it's kind of like that funny gag of like, oh, did we actually do any good or not? And so to him, he's like, I feel like that's like the weakest part of the episode. And I'm curious what you think about that, Leia. Like, do you think that is a fair criticism of the episode?
I don't think it's like a weakness of the episode, because the episode's entire purpose is to like show us that, you know, it's not as black and white as we think. And like I said, it's subverting the expectation. Like, you're expecting these demons to be the bad guys, and then, you know, they get duped into something by a human who's literally like ruthless. He kills his own brother. So it's like, now it kind of gets you thinking like, okay, so the humans are the bad guys now, and the demons may not be good guys, but they're the victims in this situation. So I don't know. I don't think that it matters, because Angel didn't have to kill a human in this episode. Like, there was no, like, I guess, is he saying like he should have been fighting humans?
Yeah, he was saying it would be more compelling if Angel, because they've made such a big deal about like Angel not wanting to kill humans, but he's killed demons like a ton before, as both Angel and Angelus. And so he was saying it'd be more impactful if he was had to go fight a human that wanted to kill Angel.
I just think the theme of the show is like helping the helpless. And in this particular instance, the demons were the helpless. So it works for me in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think that it's not a problem for me in this episode. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think?
I agree with you because it's funny. I felt like, and I love his analysis, but I feel like he was missing kind of what we talked about earlier, that this episode is about exercising free will. And it's showing that once again, there's always a choice. And again, Angel's big on choice. Like the Buffyverse is big on choice, but Angel in particular, the idea that Angel's going, look, we don't have a great choice in here. It's either kill or be killed. I'd rather let someone kill me than kill. And like even the part where like he goes after that demon or he ends up killing that demon, it's clearly shown to be an accident and or something that happened, like his animalistic side took over. And it was like he clearly was not intentionally trying to do that. Like he was ready to sacrifice himself in that moment. But at the end, like – the demons choose to revolt because they see that Angel's given them a choice. And we'll talk about it in a second, Steph. But I think that is 100% on par with what this season has been talking about and on par with the character of Angel since the beginning of Buffy. I think the show has had to establish the morally gray of humans versus demons. And that's what this episode was trying to do. Like we talked about how they have to show that demons can be good, humans can be bad. And this episode really hammered that home. And I think that it did what it was supposed to do. So sure, I think it would have been super compelling if you'd had it be humans versus Angel, but that wasn't, I don't think, the point of the episode. I think the point was you can have a choice. And I think to show that even demons can have choices too. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. I think I can kind of see it in the sense that like Angel gets dropped into this whatever the hell that place was and immediately he sides with the demons, maybe because he's like captured with them, and it's like he immediately like refuses to kill the demons. But I think like context matters also. He doesn't decide to do that until he has like the full picture of what's going on there. So at the end of the day, like Angel assessed the situation and decided these demons are the helpless ones here and we're being held captive by these humans, so I'm going to pick a side and I'm choosing the side of the helpless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which in this case happens to be the demons. So I think, yeah, this is something that they've done before in this show in particular, in Hero, and I've Got You Under My Skin. Like it's something that's like being repeated here. So yeah, I can kind of see it, but also I don't really have a problem with it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, what it does for the characters and it's just fun to watch outweighs all that other stuff. So I don't know. I just thought that was an interesting criticism. All right. Jumping into the episode. Cordelia sitting at the computer. And I got to say, girlfriend can type now. Look at her going. No more hunting and pecking for her. She's looking up a new database, or I guess it's computer program is what the script says. It says demons, demons, demons. Wesley's over there pulling a Giles from, what was it, I, Robot, You, Jane, where
yes,
he's like,
this was
books
like
are better.
Giles and Jenny.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, R.I.P.
I will say the Giles's speech about like books and being smelly gets me every time, even though I am 100% a read on my phone girl at night. I'll like read on my phone. I don't have a physical book anymore just because it's more convenient. But man, when he talks about how books smell and stuff like that, it makes me want to go to the library and check out a really old book.
Right? Books are like pretty and they smell nice and they're just, it's like a vibe that, you know, you don't get from a computer.
No, it's true. He does have a point. But Wesley's trying to say that, oh my goodness, books are so much better. And look at me, I can grab them much faster than you can, which is funny because he, like the example that he gives, he says, what about the vagaries of Odin Tai, which is a reference to the main antagonists from She. And I was like, okay, but are those, I thought they were from a different dimension. Were they demons from a different dimension or aliens? People?
They were just beings from another dimension, so I don't know why.
Why would they be in the demon database?
Yeah, like.
That's why they're not in there. Well, I guess they did find out. Yeah, they were Wesley. In there, but I guess your research isn't doing much if you can't even figure out what species they are. Yeah, that's true. A problem. But anyway, okay, they immediately mentioned Wolfram and Hart, which we're like, whoa. It's been since Parting Gifts when Cordelia got the visions that we've heard from them. And so we're like, okay, I think they're going to be a big player in this episode, which they are. So they're looking up more and more demons. And Cordelia talks about Wesley's love life and makes fun of the fact that he just wants to sit at home and watch Jeopardy and Wheel of Fortune and all that stuff. And I...
Can we just acknowledge that she says this after suggesting that demons should have their own... dating database. What does she call it? What does the script say?
Arcfiend or something? Arcfiend.org. I wonder if she's thinking about Xander. She's like, you know, it'd be really helpful if Xander could find a chick and then go home and just plug the girl's name into the demon database and be like, aha, that's a demon. I'm not going to date them.
Listen, just because you're a demon doesn't mean you can't date. And, you know,
clearly could help. Yeah, we're talking about demons and choice, you know? Yeah, it goes right in what we're talking in the rest of the episode. Demons need to have the choice to be able to date other demons or not. Justice for demons.
I could just, like, imagine, like, a demon making a profile of one of these databases. And, like, what would they write? Like, has slime in...
Yeah, I was going to say slime.
Horns protruding from head. I like to eat the hearts of babies for fun.
Come on a date with me. We will go smash buildings and spread our slime everywhere and scream in rage. Or a werewolf. Let's go howl at the moon together. Like, you know.
Interests.
The bleeding heart of virgins.
Oh my God. Sacrificial ceremonies.
Let's go to the demon fight club and bet on our favorite demon. Like, yeah, I'm sure they have, you know, similar hopes and desires and dreams that the normal person does. Maybe they like watching Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy too. Why does it have to be either or? Why is it demons over here and humans like Wheel of Fortune? Demons may like that as well, you know? Mm-hmm. So then we have, again, the whole like family metaphor. Angel is the dad coming in being like, do you guys need to see a counselor? And, like, why are you guys fighting? That whole thing.
That's the craziest thing. He's like, why would you guys need to see a counselor? Like, what?
All right. So Angel's like, children, we have company. You know, poor, long-suffering man. We have Darren come in all beat up. And he's like, as one of you, Angel, I'm Darren McNamara. I have a reputation for handling unusual problems. He pulls out the feet. Like, this guy, they really did make the villains of this episode very, like, over the top, like, oh my gosh, my brother's been captured. Here's a random finger. And I'm going to look completely disheveled and bruised and broken up. And then to have him shoot his brother later on the episode, it just, you're like, whoa. Just
completely ruthless. This guy's evil, pure evil.
No, but for real, like, what kind of evil guy looks up another guy, Angel, who is clearly trying to help? Like, his tagline is, we help the hopeless. And they're like, oh yeah, we're going to take this guy that's doing good things and we're going to enslave him.
Well, could it be that Wolfram and Hart told them about Angel and that he was a threat and getting in their way perhaps, and they needed to eliminate him somehow? Because we know that Lila takes Angel out of that place because supposedly, you know, apparently Wolfram and Hart has a special interest in Angel, and like we've been kind of seeing this, and we kind of saw it in Parting Gifts, they have their eye on him and they're clearly involved in whatever this thing is, like the fighting ring. So maybe it was Wolfram and Hart.
You know, I like that theory, especially because Lila comes to Angel and her offer is, come work for us, you can do good in quotations, even though you're still working for them. But by doing that, they can control what Angel does and doesn't do. Exactly. So, yeah. Yep. That makes a lot of sense. Still, I think these guys are pretty evil, but I think that's kind of – that goes without saying. So Angel's like, all right, we're going to go check out the bookie. We'll help you. And then we cut to a bunch of guys playing poker. And I this sounds really bad, but I thought the bookie was kind of hot.
Which one?
The one that Angel ends up talking to. Yeah. I thought he was kind of
hot. Like a little weasel.
I don't know. I thought he was kind of cute, but
Sarah.
I know. Well, I think he kind of looked like my husband too. I thought might have been why.
He did not. What?
I don't know. I just thought he was kind of cute. He's awful, obviously, but I was like, I don't know. I was like, oh.
All right. Okay. Well,
cute bookie. Ernie. He does have the worst name ever, though. Ernie. Like Ernie. Instant ick. Instant ick. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Angel does what he does best. He drops in and says, I have a pair of jacks. I was like, very nice. Very nice. Pulls the bookie out. Then we have this like really extra meeting in the alleyway. When Angel like pretends to like light his cigarette and holds up like the $200 bills. I was like, anybody can see that you clearly don't have a lighter in your hand. Like, no one, who is this fooling? No one. No one.
He could have literally just handed him the $200 and been like, hey, look, I have these with me. Just take
episode,
them.
Like, this episode really is so over the top.
This is why Angel is an actor. He needs to play up the drama.
Angel's very dramatic.
I love it. I'm same.
It was very funny. So the bookie tells him, okay, there's a place in Beechwood Canyon. And as we have like this voiceover of Angel driving up, there's a couple different times in this episode where we hear Angel's theme here. The one that we heard when he accepts his mission, the one we heard in City of, all this stuff. They're very much hammering home the hero theme of Angel this episode, which, I mean, this is very Spartacus. This is very, I don't know, the classic trope of the hero goes in. It's like Hunger Games. I refuse to kill, so I'm going to sacrifice myself. Like, it's very, very heroic.
I mean, they call him Captain America at one point. So.
They do. Yes. It is that whole vibe right there. And I literally was like spot on. If he was any Avenger, he would be Captain America 1000%.
Would he?
Oh, yeah. What do you think? Iron Man?
Angel,
Hawkeye?
No. I feel like he would be closer to being Hawkeye because he's like, I feel like Captain America is just too goody. Like he's not like.
Oh, I see.
There's no like duality there. I feel like Angel would actually be like Bucky. Like he would be.
You know what? I see it. Yes. He's like tortured. He's a little bit more morally gray. Yeah. No, yeah. I see that.
He has that like dual side to him that he's trying to like, he wants to be good, but there's like something that's like deep within him that's really dark. And he like fights to be good. You know, I feel like Captain America is definitely, that's more like Riley vibe, I find.
Oh yeah.
You know,
you're right.
He's just,
I take it all
too,
back.
Too like you morally righteous. And I feel like Angel is really good and everything, but he has that like darkness inside of him.
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
that Steve Rogers never had. Yeah. No, I totally, you sold me. Honestly, I have to say I'm really impressed, Leia, because there was a small part of me. I know you've watched Marvel, but I was really scared you're going to say Batman. And I was going to be like, Leia, wrong universe. Come on, girl. It's DC. But you know what? You surpassed. It was great.
I wanted to surprise you today. So.
You did. And you know what? Guess what? We're talking about another piece of media outside of Angel that we both get and
that
we both understand.
Know. Wow.
And I think this is the first time.
Revolutionary day on Investigating Angel podcast. This is one for the books.
Seriously, guys.
Listeners, mark your calendars on this day, the 6th of March. February. Jesus Christ.
I don't know when this is airing, but whatever day it is for you that you are listening, mark your calendar.
Mark your calendar.
Yes. And it will never happen again. So I'm going to soak this in.
Hey, that's
the symmetry.
Not true. It might. I know a few other things sometimes.
I'm keeping my expectations low, but you know, as long as we keep pointing back to Marvel, we'll be great. It'll be perfect. No, but seriously, somewhere out there, someone is cheering because there's so many people. We get so many DMs of people being like, oh,
I
understand
that reference. I contributed to this conversation and like about another piece of media. Like, what is happening?
You can stay, Leia. You have solidified your position as my co-host.
So
your probationary period is now over.
Oh, my God. What a relief. I can sleep better at night now.
I know. I know that was keeping you up. Anyway, all right, moving on. Angel's theme song. Cordy is back at her computer. They're looking up the demon that supposedly took Darren. Bald, ultra white skin, and slimy. Cordelia's like, ah, there's always slime. And I was like, yeah, truer words. There seriously always is. So she's typing in all this stuff. And there is a lot of details about this demon, which should have been the first clue that this demon doesn't actually exist. They're like, you know, sulfuric. He has claw-like hands. Normally people are like, I don't know. I just saw something. It was dark and that was it, yeah. You know. He has an eerie, high-pitched howl or wail, all that stuff, yada, yada. And Wesley's like, this is a howler demon. So then Angel climbs down into a sewer and a bunch of aliens in jumpsuits jump Angel. And they're like, ah, ah, ah. And I was like, sounds like my children when they don't want to go to bed. It even kind of looks like them too.
I just love that. Isn't there a howler demon over on Buffy too?
Yeah, in season 5. I think, isn't that the demon that like comes out of the thing and I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Out of the meteor or whatever.
It's the one that goes after Jace, right?
Oh, my God. But it's also really funny that the howler demon on Angel actually howls. Like they're just a hyena. Like they just, ah!
It's like echolocation. I know. They're kind of terrifying. But they literally look like they just got out of prison. They got these orange jumpsuits on.
They look like they were just hanging out, like, in the sewer. Like, they looked pretty harmless to me, to be honest. They looked like good demons, honestly.
Right. Well, and okay, again, you know, we have the parallels. It's not really a parallel. I'm just being stupid. You know, Buffy getting jumped in a sewer by those two demons. Angel getting jumped by these two demons in the sewer. I mean, the symmetries are just – I'm totally joking. Like,
I feel like it's a show on vampires.
Right. Who's – like at some point they're going to get jumped in sewers. But it is interesting. They're both being ambushed and they both were set up by someone else and it was a human. So
good eye. Good catch.
Thank you. Thank you. Someone out there was like, what the heck? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. Anyway, all right. Angel's like, where is Jack McNamara? Which is a pretty cool villain name. Angel should have known instantly. That has bad guy all over it. The howler demon's like, not here. And Angel is classic Batman voice. Where is he? Or I think it was, where is she in Batman? But whatever. We sold him. And then the way like the camera is angled, you can tell someone is watching Angel's interaction with these guys and you're cluing into, okay, something else is going on. Angel ends up pulling up to this rundown neighborhood, but there's all these beautiful cars and beautifully dressed people walking in. There's a bouncer taking tickets. Angel gets inside and as he's walking in the club, there's this gorgeous, gorgeous lady sitting at a table.
Gorgeous.
Gorgeous. Gorgeous, gorgeous girls. And she drops her ticket or starts to drop her ticket. Angel, lightning fast reflexes, man, grabs it. And there's instant like sizzling energy between the two of them. Oh, it's so good.
Like, instant. I'm just like, oh, what is this?
Stephanie
this is the first spark I've seen on TV on this show since like I Will Remember You. Like, honestly, this is the first time.
Right. There was a lot of like sexual tension between him and Jira, but it was like,
It was
a different kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It was a bit over. It was heavy. You could tell they were like trying really hard to push it.
The heavy breathing was distracting me. This was like very just, this was spicy in like the perfect way.
Oh, yeah. And just like the look she gave. Oh, so good. I was like, juicy. Give me more of this. Mm-hmm. Angel looks at the ticket. It says 5,000 to win Crib, which as we come to find out is one of the fighters. And you could just – the way they set up Lila, you just know she's going to be important. You just know she's coming back. Like, it's impossible for her to just be a one-time only character. Like, this woman has longevity, obviously. So Angel walks into another room. It's Fight Club. Demons are fighting. It's Crib and another guy, and Crib ends up winning. And as he goes down into, like, this corridor – he sees Jack – the guy, the long-lost brother or whatever. He ends up getting ambushed. They use cattle prods. And we see that Darren's there too and that it was a complete setup. Immediately, they're like, oh, let me see those teeth. Like, they're super cocky. And then they, like, get him on the floor. And immediately, I was like, no, unhand my Angel. It makes me sad when I see him, like, all zapped up and knocked to the floor.
He always has to get knocked out.
I know. Poor guy. So Jack says, this one's got some attitude. That'll be good. He'll be a crowd pleaser. And immediately we're like, okay, they're going to use him to fight just like one of those other guys. So then now we're down into like the basement area. We see Angel wake up and he's got a thick silver cuff on his wrist and has XSI on it. And
his jacket's off. Don't forget that part.
That's right. Here's the tank
white
top.
Tank. This is the beginning of the white tank era of this episode. So pay attention, guys.
Or just visualize in your minds if you're not watching. Yeah. You know, just picture it.
Picture it. Mm-hmm.
The thing is that it was really interesting before I watched this episode. I literally was thinking, because I forgot like that Angel was in a tank top this entire episode. I literally was thinking, you know, it has been a really long time since we've seen Angel in a tank top. And I'm like, I guess we're just not really going to see it from here on out. And then, you know, the Lord gave us this glorious episode where it was like 95% Angel in a tank top. And I was like, thank you.
Lots of like back shots, lots of shoulder shots.
Yes, it was so good. Oh, yeah. Interesting, the intentional contrast of the above versus the below. Like the camera pans down from where everybody is up on top, down below to where the demons is. And I think visually they're trying to like humans are above, demons are below. And like normally that's been shown to be like good versus bad. And in this one, the humans are above, the supposed good characters are above, and they're watching and they're applauding. And they're the ones that are like not doing anything to help free these people or these demons down below. And the demons are the ones in captivity. And so again, it's like they're using this parallel of this visual to subvert it, which I thought was really clever. Angel says, I asked for a room with a view, which is really funny because the actor who plays Crib, Marcus Redmond, he also played Griff in Room with a View.
Interesting.
And so I wonder if that's a nod. There's a couple little nods to she in this episode which are kind of funny. But the actor also goes on to play in Fight Club as well, which is hilarious. So I guess the guy is typecast. Yeah. Also, the Italian in this episode is gibberish. Just want to point that out. Come on.
Oh, my God. Not again. David Boreanaz is Italian.
I know.
He literally is Italian. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't, like, speak the language, but I'm sure that, like, out of Korean and Italian, he would have been more, like, excited to learn Italian just for, one line.
You can't tell what what he's saying in this one, but it's clearly not the correct phrase for can you speak Italian? It's clearly not the words for can you speak Italian. So it's possible that David Boreanaz is speaking Italian, but it's not the correct phrase for what they want him to say. Mm-hmm. And it's intelligible. You can't tell what he's saying. So it leads us to believe it's gibberish. But either way, like, come on, do better.
I find that this whole scene was a little bit like out of place. Like, again, he was like cracking jokes. Like, why was he cracking jokes? Like, I just didn't really understand this scene just in general, because he literally just wakes up and starts making jokes at this demon who's just staring at him like deadpan. And just like, I'm like, why is this happening?
Well, maybe it's like his inner Angelus comes out when he's in danger. Like, he's just like, he lets his guard down a little bit. I don't know. You don't think so? Okay, that's fine.
I don't know.
I mean, I agree with you. It was a little odd that, like, I feel like Angel would have just been silent and just would have observed everything and not have said anything. But
that's what you would, like, expect from Angel. So it was just a little bit jarring. Not jarring, but it just kind of felt, like, out of place.
That's fair.
In the episode in particular, and also for Angel, like, he usually quips and like he puns and stuff just like Buffy does, but that's like if he's in a fight, like in the middle of a fight, like he'll.
And it's very dry. It's very dry. Yeah. Like, this was more just like, hey, buddy, like I was hoping for a room with a view.
What language do you speak? Like,
what? Yeah, and he goes off and you're like, wait, why? What is going on with you?
What is the point of this?
Nope, there is no point. So then Jack comes down. He's like, listen up, slaves. And we're like, oh, you must be the bad guy. There's only one rule here. And then he's like, you know, you can't cross this line. If you cross the line, like, you're just here to fight, yada, yada. And then he says, after you've had your 21st kill, the ban comes off. Angel immediately says, I'm not killing anyone. Jack says, then you'll be killed. Either way, fans are going to get their money. Back with Wesley and Cordelia, they're starting to get worried because Angel hasn't shown up. I like that Wesley's like, oh, he's only been gone for one night. It'll be fine. And I do think it is interesting that they clearly called Kate, and how they keep like pulling her back in. Like, they called Kate to say where he is, and Wesley's like, it doesn't seem like she doesn't much care. And I was like, okay, like just like little hints to kind of keep us abreast of what's going on with Kate and Angel. So Cordelia's like, no. I think something's wrong. Wesley's like, he's probably just holed up. And Cordelia's like, no, we can't find our client. Something is wrong. So Wesley is like, all right, I'm going after the bookie. He opens a drawer, pulls out like a huge tangle of weapons. It's been a while since we've had like a good Wesley gag. And it was so perfect as he's like pulling it all out. And you're just like, oh no, Wesley, this is not going to go well. You're going to get hurt.
Boy, was I wrong. Clumsy Wesley.
He's just endearing. So the demon barracks guard is dishing out brown slop because they always have to show how disgusting the food is. Angel's trying to make small talk with some of the other demons, and they want nothing to do with him. One of the demons, Crib, grabs Malish, another demon's food. And interesting, so Crib, the character, is based on the boxer Tom Crib from 1781 to 1848, who was one of England's most celebrated champions of the bare knuckle era. He made milling on the retreat acceptable as a mode of fighting. So that's where you like windmill your fists. Honestly, all I can think is Henry Cavill in Mission Impossible, where he does the like gun loading.
Ooh, don't talk about Henry Cavill on this podcast.
Anyway, okay. Tank tops and Henry Cavill. He held the title throughout the years of the sport's peak in popularity. Upon his retirement in 1822, he was awarded a lionskin championship belt, the first title belt. And I think you sent it to me, Leia, is the most recent David Boreanaz interview where he was talking about like what drew him to the role of Angel in the first place. And I think he talked about how they like whoever wrote up the character, like either script or like description and sent it to David, was talking about like used a boxing analogy and how Angel was the type of character that like got knocked down over and over again, but always got back up. And I wonder if that was kind of an inspiration for this episode. And I bet you David Boreanaz really loved shooting this.
Yeah. He always talks about how that was the perspective that he decided to, like, that's how he played Angel, and that's what drew him to the character. So it is really interesting. This episode really does play into that like whole description so well. Interesting. Yeah. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, but like once they mentioned Crib boxing and all that stuff, I was like, okay, that makes a lot of sense. But so Crib is kind of the class bully, taking the other demons' gruel. Angel stands up for him. Guards come in with their cattle prods and walks away, and Malish comes up to him and is like, hey, why did you do that? I can fight my own battles. And Angel's like, no, you can't. Like, you need to get out of here. And Malish says, don't rock the boat. This is life and death in here. And interestingly, I just found this out. Malish is played by a guy named Mark Rose, who actually played Josh over on Buffy in Fear Itself. He was one of the frat guys that painted the symbol on the floor. I think he's one of the guys that ends up getting killed by the fear demon. So
interesting.
Just a fun little throwback.
Recycling actors, the Buffy
as they do
number one, you know,
yeah,
MO.
Of course. Jack comes in, kind of gives the list of who's going to fight who. Vaslovic is going to fight Baker. Trapkos is going against Malish. And Trapkos has been kind of the really strong, silent type we've seen so far. And they've done a really good job of showing this kind of inner conflict. You can tell that this guy is super intimidating, but you kind of get the vibe he doesn't want to be here. You can tell he's just doing this to survive, but you can tell he's also kind of intrigued by Angel versus Crib, who's over there just like every man for himself, you know? So immediately like starts this whole conflict. Like you can see, oh gosh, this guy Malish is gonna die, but he's gonna die by Trepkos, who doesn't want to kill him, and all that stuff. This one of the demons suddenly launches himself across the room because we had to have a demonstration of how you cannot escape, and they basically just turn into ash and disintegrate. And oh no, well, that means he can't fight. So it looks like Captain America, Angel, is going to be the one that's going to go fight the next demon. We see the bookie. Okay, this surprised me watching this moment. So Wesley walks in. You're like, oh, this is not going to go well. There's a bunch of guys. Mm-hmm. They're all bigger than him, whatever. Wesley comes in. I'm Wesley Wyndham Price, and I'm looking for my employer.
My employer.
Come on, Wesley. You started off so strong there. Your name itself is so like imposing. And then he's like, I'm looking for my employer. You're like, Wesley.
It literally sounds like he's in school. Like,
yes.
Like he's like a parent, like coming, my name is Wesley Wyndham Price and I'm looking for my child.
Do you have me on your list like, there? Yes, exactly. Yeah. Oh, my word. The guy's like, well, give me $200. And like, what are you going to give me? Basically, like, give me, like, make an offer. And Wesley's like, well, you should understand, the man I work for means a great deal to me. And I was like, aww, that's so sweet. And I just was really impressed. We're seeing a solid backbone coming out of Wesley. And I think that this gives credence to my theory that Wesley's actually far more capable than we've been giving him credit for. And that when it's up to him and when he doesn't feel like the pressure of maybe being watched by someone that he deems as better than him, or maybe when he's not feeling so insecure, he actually is quite competent and can get the job done. Because this impressed me. Like, he shoots the gun out of the guy's hand, pins his hand to the wall, grabs the gun, and aims the gun at the other men. They leave, and then he comes over and starts to move the pin around in the guy's – I was like, what?
Yeah. Was not expecting that. Very badass of him. Yeah, and I think this is something, like, we've slowly been seeing from Wesley. Like, he's really, you know – they're trying to tell us that he's willing to do what it takes to get results. And I think his newfound confidence, especially after the last episode and like, sorry, after the last few episodes, and he's like slowly finding his place within and like investigating angel investigations.
Oh no.
You know, so he's gaining that confidence. And I think like, he's definitely more than capable. I think he's like proven at this point that he's very capable of like handling himself, even though when he decided to go off on his own, I was like, oh no, Wesley, like this is a terrible idea. Why would you do that? But like, this just proves that he can handle himself, obviously to a certain extent. Like, he wouldn't be able to handle himself this way, like against a demon, but it's just great to see him like come out of his shell and like, you know, yes, Angel's his employer, but they've also been building like a friendship, and he is important. Angel is important to him. And
yeah,
this just shows Wesley's willing to do, you know, what it takes for the people that he cares about, which is what Angel's also willing to do. So it's nice to see that like Angel's been rubbing off on Wesley.
So we cut to the announcer in the pit. He's like, ladies and gentlemen. And he's dressed like a 1950s boxing announcer with like the mic that comes down, like the suit and everything. It was very funny. The dark haired lady, which I guess I shouldn't say her name, but Lila, is talking to Darren. Very clear that they're in cahoots together. She's talking about the vampire with a soul, and she is curious about him. She's like, when he's fighting, do you think that that soul would be a plus or a minus? And Darren says, probably depends on what he's fighting for. And she says, does that mean you'll give me odds on him to win? And so they like kind of like this little like banter going back and forth. And then we cut to Angel kind of leaning against the wall, brooding, because, you know, as he does. And we're kind of curious too. Like, is Angel going to fight? Is he going to let the guy kill him? Like, what's going on here? Malish comes up and feels like he owes Angel a little tidbit in how to get out of the situation that he's in, says that like Baker has messed up left eye. Angel once again says, I'm not going to kill anyone. And then it is time. Ugh, every scene where they have Angel walk in is so good. It's just like the lights. It's so cinematic. Angel just looks so tortured, and his wife beater, like, it just looks so good.
Muscular.
So muscular and sad and tragic.
So miserable.
Yeah, thinking about Steph's TikTok. So hot, so miserable. Oh, yeah.
God, he's so hot, so miserable.
The miserableness makes him hotter. I can fix him.
Shout out Prophecy Girl Steph for that TikTok.
That was a fantastic
perfection. You really nailed the whole vibe that is Angel, the whole vibe that is Angel. Yeah. And this episode definitely brings the hot and miserable.
The hot and miserable in spades, or in jacks, I guess I should
white
say.
Tank tops.
With a little bit of snark, yes. It's just broody Angel. It's so good.
That's my favorite type of angel.
Yeah. I even wrote in my notes, he looks so good in his white tank top.
He looks so good.
All right.
God, we're such horn dogs.
We really are. But I mean, this episode was just eye candy. It was just all his hair just looks so good too.
Yeah. Like, injured Angel in a white tank top angel fighting for his life and miserable. My favorite four angels. And all in one episode. Like, you can't ask me to just be okay here. You can't ask me to be normal. I'm not normal about this.
Angel's over here just walking into a room and we're like, oh my gosh. And Wesley's over here doing the absolute most and we're like, wow, Wesley, well done.
Wesley literally made an ancient key and I'm just like, Angel in a tank top, please bring me back there.
I know. Oh my gosh. Oh, we have such double standards, man. Okay. So they fight. Well, Baker fights. Angel's not really fighting. Everyone's getting frustrated. Crib is watching, saying the vampires aren't even fighting. Cut to Cordelia in a coat and Wesley in a suit coming to the outside of the club. And this scene was just absolute perfection.
Well done, so funny.
Both of their parts. They were so funny. So, like, Wesley had forgotten, or it was either Wesley or Cordelia. It was Cordelia. Cordelia had forgotten the badge. And immediately they're like, okay, we have to think on our feet. Cordelia just walks right up. It's like, sir, madam, I'm Detective Andrews. And this is Detective Yelsu. And, okay, Yelsu, it is Wesley backwards.
I had to pause it because I have captions on. I have the closed captioning on and I had to pause it. I was like, wait, did she just say Wesley backwards, like just off the top of her head? Because it would have taken me. I would have been like, Wesley.
That's what I was going to say. I would have had to
spell it and then like write it backwards.
Yes.
And like say it a few times. And I'm like, what the hell?
Her brain worked so fast. She just had to hesitate for just a second. Was like, Yelsu. I've never been able to do, what is it, like pig Latin? I can't do pig Latin. Yeah, I can't figure. It takes me too long to figure all that stuff out. So frankly,
I can hardly say words in like the right, correct order. Don't ask me to like say them backwards.
Right. Yeah. My brain will scramble them accidentally, but never like intentionally. Yeah. So she's all like, all right, there's going to be a raid. We need you out of here. Wesley almost blows it by being like, it's the
man. Wait, you missed the part where Wesley shows the badge and it's the funniest like physical comedy I've ever seen in my life where he just, he just like goes behind Cordelia. He like pulls it out and then does a rainbow really quick. He's just like, here, look. And then he puts it away.
Definitely not a badge at all. Oh my gosh. And then
that was
like,
so funny.
The couple is like, oh my gosh. And they like mouth thank you as they walk away. And then they're like smiling. And then Cordelia whacks Wesley. And she's like, you almost blew it. And he's like, what are you talking about? I saved it. And she's like, definitely not. Something is going like, down with the man.
With the man.
Idiot.
Wesley was like so over the top, just so like dramatic about it too. He was like, something's going down with the man. And he like gets in their face.
I was like, Wesley, what are you, Jack Black from, what is it, School Rock, where he's all like, rock music is sticking it to the man. And the entire time, everyone's just talking about the man. Ugh. Yeah, it was funny. It was pure comedy gold. It was scenes like that. And it wasn't just the one scene. There were multiple scenes of them together that just were so fun to watch. And I just really love the dynamic. Mm-hmm. So cut to Angel being pummeled by Baker. Crib is watching, once again saying he's an idiot. The crowd is jeering. And Cordelia and Wesley walk into this and they see Darren and he's playing with one of the bracelets. And then they see Angel. And Wesley instantly is like, okay, they're like the gladiator matches back in the Roman Empire. The Wesley instantly clues in that, like, if they cross with the bracelets, they'll disintegrate. Darren puts a bracelet down, and they're trying to, like, feed into the fight. So they drop a knife down. Everybody starts yelling, killing blow, gets slashed a couple – or Angel gets slashed a couple of times. And we have this heart-wrenching moment where Angel goes into vamp face out of instinct, and it's – is not really very clear, but it's very obvious that Angel doesn't mean to kill this guy, that the guy either fell into the knife or that Angel's animalistic instincts took over. And it's like when he comes to, he recognizes what he's done. And it's like made out to be a really heart-wrenching moment because you can – and I think – I really do think it's his animalistic side because I think there's this tension there showing that like Angel can't ever escape that side of himself, that no matter what his best intentions are, when it comes to things like this – he often, when he's forced to, like, it's going to happen simply because of who he is. And that's ultimately really heartbreaking. And I think it was so sad that Wesley and Cordelia were there to see that as well, because they feel for him in that moment. They know what he's going through and like how that weighs on him, you know? So it's just sad. Do you think it was intentional or do you think it was an accident? Like he like slipped into the knife?
I think what you said is correct, that like Angel's sort of demon instinct, like animal instinct, kicked in and he just was, you know, fighting for survival at that point. And I think a part of it was probably intentional. Like I don't think the guy slipped on the knife. I think it was just like the fight was fast and like you said, Angel's animal instinct kicked in and he just kind of did what he had to do. But I think the shock that was like on his face is like he didn't want to do it, obviously. So
right.
I tend to agree with your reading of it.
David Boreanaz, and I think part of it is just how he carries himself. But David Boreanaz is a big guy. He's got big shoulders. I know we've talked about it extensively. I'm not telling you anything new here. But I will say the way that David carries himself as Angel, that kind of it's like stooped slightly. As he's walking away and he walks away as he normally does, it just conveys the burden that Angel has on his shoulders. Like you just see – it was almost like yet another soul that's going to keep Angel up at night, yet another life that he's taken that is going to weigh on his conscience. Like, yeah. And then in that moment, I just really thought about the curse and how like the curse of the gypsies was that Angel has to – bear a conscience. And so it's moments like this that just make it that much harder. And I don't know, I just thought that was a very powerful moment as he walks away and has to live with the guilt of all of that. Not that we haven't seen it before, but I just thought it was really poignant in that scene. So all of the demons are like, well, so much for not killing. Jack is like, all right, Trepkos and Malish, it's time. Angel's like, if no one fights, no one dies. And they're like, you killed someone. Why would we listen to you? You can tell that Trepkos is like, you can tell he doesn't want to do this and he's listening to him and he says, you know, I'll make it fast. I'll kill him quick. And Angel's like, I'm giving you another way out. And nope. So they go up and unfortunately Malish just like, you can see the poor guy, he's fighting with all that he's got. It's not doing anything. And Trepkos just snaps his neck and that's it. So cut to Cordy and Wesley. They're walking out of the club. Cordy's like, we should call the police. Wesley's like, no, I don't think that's a good idea because either they're being paid off or McNamara's are going to destroy the evidence and take off and go somewhere else and we will never be able to find Angel. Like, this is just not going to work. So we have to find another way to get Angel out of there. And he's like, I need to get one of those wrist cuffs. And Cordelia pulls it right out of her pocket and we're like, oh my gosh, Cordelia, MVP of this episode, man.
Yeah, yep. Definitely.
So we cut to dinner again in the barracks. Jack is mocking Angel, saying, wow, my favorite part is when you stuck Baker with the knife. Angel's had enough, goes up and says, somebody needs to put you in your place. Jack says, someone may someday, but not you and not today. I was like, wow, who are we, Dr. Seuss? Yeah. And he like, I like how Angel just takes a moment. It kind of felt a little bit like Angelus. He's like, And then he just shoots out a hand, which I was like, that was quite a bold move, man, for someone who, as a vampire, already will disintegrate into ash at any moment.
Yeah.
Grabs Jack, pulls him in, and is like, hey, guys, help me out. Like, one of you guys, like, grab one of the other guards and stuff. Like, we have a chance. We have a shot. And nobody moves. Angel's like, all right, I want to see Darren. I want to see his brother. Darren comes in. Angel's like, I've got your brother. If you want your brother back alive, then let me go. Take off these cuffs. And Darren, without hesitating, just picks up his gun and shoots his brother 3 times, hitting Angel in the right shoulder. And is like, well, now he's my dead brother. Cold, cold, cold.
Yeah. it kind of makes you think about, you know, these demons, like, did they try to escape in the beginning? Have they tried this before? And they kind of know the deal that, you know, Darren is ruthless and he'll do whatever it takes for money and to, like, get money from people watching them fight. So it kind of, like, because that's something that I was kind of thinking about when, you know, Angel comes in and he's trying to change things and none of these demons are budging, because they've been here for so long that they probably know that they can't win because they've just been, like, oppressed for so long. So this was very, I mean, just ruthless. The fact that this guy's willing to kill his own brother for, at the end of the day, it's for money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's just, that's, like, beyond evil.
A lot of the complaints was like, oh my gosh, they made the human villains too mustache twirly. And they really had to emphasize how bad these guys were. There could be no gray area in who was bad and who was good, because they're trying to show there are some awful, awful humans and there are some good demons. Like, they needed that contrast. They needed it to be very clear cut. But yeah, I mean, the audacity of just, like, killing your brother for money is very human, but also just, like, not a good reason at all. Like, not that there is any good reason, but, like, it's just so selfish, and, like, it's such a basic thing too. It's like, wow, you're really gonna kill. And again, we've been watching the theme of family and found family rising up in this season with, you know, Angel investigations and stuff. And so I think the fact that this guy is willing to shoot a guy who is his own literal blood, and then you have Wesley over here who's like, where's my employer? I say in quotations, but what he really means is, where's my family, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so Angel comes to after being hit with the cattle prods, and he's in a fancy office, and there's that lady there, Lila, Lila Morgan. And instantly, there's just so much sexual tension.
Sparks, so many sparks.
Angel clues in that she's a lawyer. She's with Wolfram and Hart. Lila is playing it off as if she did this big favor for Angel. Congratulations, you're free. And he's like, no, as long as I pretend it never happened, that McNamara and his circus don't exist, that's the deal, isn't it? Lila ignores it and says, it's a big city, Angel. A lot of people need your help, which I think is so interesting that she has him immediately pinpointed. She understands what he's trying to do. And so she gives him what might have been the thing that would have swayed him the most. Like, hey.
Yeah, it's total manipulation. I mean, this is like,
right.
This lady is master of manipulation. And, you know, this kind of gives you an idea as to, like, what Wolfram and Hart is after as well.
Right. She's like, oh my gosh, you can help so many people. Just ignore this one tiny little thing. It's the end justifies the means. It doesn't matter that these one people get away as long as you're able to help all these other people. And obviously Angel's not going to do that. He's like, I'm not compromising. I'm not looking the other way while Wolfram and Hart are involved. And she says, I prefer to think of it as picking the battles you can win. There is not one reason why we can't work together. And I will say this conversation is so, so important. And it sets up so many things in the future that we can't talk about. But make a mental note of it, because this is so important.
Very, very, very important conversation.
Mm-hmm. And it's just crazy. I honestly forgot about this, because this is like a seemingly throwaway episode, but this is important. It's huge. This is so good. Angel gets up and it's like, it looks like he's going to accept. He's like, you're right. He grabs the champagne. She smiles at him and he's like, there are about 1,000. And then she decides to twist that knife. She's already got, like, the knife in him. And she's like, all right, I saw what you did to Baker. So I know you want to survive. So she's trying to, like, now instead of, like, being like, oh my gosh, you're so magnanimous, you can go help people. Now she's like, now I'm going to bring you down to my level. I'm going to beat you into submission. This is your only chance. Take it. And Angel says, thanks for the champagne. And then just goes right back into captivity. All right, so Wesley's working on the bracelet. Cordelia's bemoaning the amount of violence that's going on. Wesley says that he has kind of figured out that it needs something that conducts electricity, that it's a mix of medieval technology and half magic. So he's trying to do all the alchemy, and he's got a wire, and there's an explosion of sparks, and Wesley's thrown back, and clearly they're not ready, and they got to figure it out some more. So then cut back to Angel walking back into the demon barracks. And so Angel's choice to not take the bait is what causes the other demons to sit up and take notice and be like, oh, this guy is actually serious. And they have Angel's theme music playing again, right here, again, showing that he made the right choice, that this is a heroic moment, and the demons now are willing to listen. Darren says, you think you proved something special by coming back here. As Angel crosses the red line and holds out his wrist, Darren locks a bracelet around it. They didn't help you before. They're not going to help you now. I wonder if Darren suspects that that this might shake the demons a little bit, like as if he's like realizing, oh my goodness.
I think
like,
Darren is too much of a narcissist to think that true. He can ever be like taken down. So I definitely don't think that he had any clue what was going to happen.
That's true. Yeah. But I mean, he's very sadistic, because then he immediately pairs him with Trepkos, and recognizing that Trepkos is doubly motivated to kill this guy now because Angel's his 21st kill. And we're like, oh boy, here we go. All right. So Wesley is still not able to find whatever it is to get to be a conductor for the bracelet. Cordelia immediately realizes that horsehair would work. Ding, ding, ding. She says, what does she say? This is Keanu, her Palomino from Keanu. Before the IRS took him away. And I was like, is she a fan of Keanu Reeves? Did she watch Coppola's Dracula? And she's all like, Keanu.
Who isn't a fan of Keanu Reeves? What an angel of a man.
All right. So it works. And I was like, well done, Cordelia, once again, showing that she's very smart and resourceful.
And it's the thing. This is the thing about like Wesley and Cordelia together. It's like, they play so well off of each other that they come up with like ideas on the spot. Like, had they sat there and like thought about it and, oh, what are we going to do in this and that? Like, it wouldn't have probably come to them. Like, they're not, Cordelia's not like book smart, but you know, but
she's street smart though.
She's street smart. And I feel like what her and Wesley do that really well together. They just like are a great team. So I love this. This is such a great dynamic for her.
And normally I feel like when Wesley's down there trying to figure all this out, Cordelia would be somewhere else, like doing something else. I think there's been other times where she's like, okay, well, call me when you figure it out. She's down there actively trying to help save Angel. And I thought that was like really admirable. All right. So we see Lila betting on Trepkos, not on Angel, She got burned for one, but I also think that Lila sees Angel as weak. I think she sees him as weak because he doesn't enjoy fighting, because this isn't what he wants to do. I think she really does think, like, this guy's going to die. And I think she also sees, too, that, like, he's willing to sacrifice himself for the greater good. So she's like, why would I bet on Angel? I'm going to obviously bet on the other guy. So cut to the pit. Angel walks into the ring. This is just like all so cinematic. There's so much slow-mo in this episode. It's glorious. His opponent is a fan favorite who needs no introduction. It is his 21st and final fight. So Trepkos comes in. Angel says, is this how you want to pay for your freedom? With 21 bodies, you'll always be their slave, even if they take that off your wrist. And Trepkos says, I'll kill you quick. Angel says, I won't let you. So such a clever line, because it has like a double meaning. So obviously, I won't let you as in like, I'm not going to let you kill me easily. But also, I'm not going to make this easy for you, because I want you to make the right choice. So I'm going to give you the time to figure that out. And also, like, Angel's like, I'm fighting for you too. It's not enough to be free because they say you are. Your freedom is up to you. Like, own your autonomy. And I just thought that was very clever. There was actually a part of the script that was cut out here. So they cut straight to Cordelia, like, wandering around pretending like she's lost. So what happens is Cordelia and Wesley come up again on the outside and see the guard or the bouncer, and they're talking. And Wesley says, all I'm saying is you might have thought of the horsehair sooner. Not that being flung across a room isn't jolly good exercise. And Cordelia says, speaking of horsehair, where did you find that jacket? And then the guard says, Mr. and Mrs. Winslow, good to see you again. And Wesley says, don't touch me. And the guard says, remind me never to get married.
What a cute scene.
Yes. I wish we had seen it, but I can pretty much picture it in my head.
Yeah, definitely.
So Cordelia doing what Cordelia does best, be a distraction, pretend like she's lost. Wesley is darting around the corridor, past the guards, goes over to the window where all the prisoners are, sees Crib, the absolute worst person to see, and is like, can I see you? Can you help me? And Crib is like, oh yeah, your friend's dead. Or he's going to be in about 20 seconds. And then Wesley holds up the key and says, hey, we can help each other. This unlocks the cuffs, not knowing that Crib is part amphibian and can just lash out his tongue and grab the key. And bye-bye key. Immediately Crib turns around and we're like, shucks, what's going to happen next? So we cut back to Angel and Trepko's fighting. Darren's getting frustrated that it's taking too long, so he pulls two wooden staffs and puts them into the pit. Trepko's grabs his. They continue to fight. Wesley comes out and Cordelia's like, what happened? He's like, they took my key. Then he gets an idea, spotting Darren, heads over there. Trepko's now has Angel in a bind, and Angel's not doing so hot. He's getting pretty beat up, but he manages to get the stick and points it to Trepko's throat. Mm-hmm. And just as he's making that decision of like, is he going to kill him? Is he not? We cut back to Crib. He unlocks the cuffs and he hears the crowds chanting Angel's name. So he realizes the tide has turned, goes back and sees just in time that Angel chooses not to kill Trepko's. And I was like, geez, how long did it take that guy to take his cuffs off?
Honestly,
it took the entire time. Wesley went all the way back up, but whatever.
These fighting sequences are also really, really cool. Just visually.
They're so cool. It's so hard to, like, when you're doing a podcast, because there's no way to possibly describe it in a way that, like, makes it nearly as cool as watching it. But they really, really did a fantastic job with coordinating the stunts in this entire episode. Mm-hmm. All right. So Wesley and Cordelia are making their way over to Darren. Trepko's is hitting Angel, who's in pretty bad shape by now. The crowd is shouting, killing blow, killing blow. And then Trepko's just kind of like has that moment like where he's staring at Angel and Angel's looking him in the eye. Like Angel's like, I want you to see me when you kill me. Like I want you to look at me and recognize what you're doing. And Trepko's just kind of like has a moment where he looks out at the crowd and goes, what am I doing? Like I'm feeding into this. Like they're telling me what to do. Like, and I'm doing it. Like, why don't I stand up and be my own person? Darren immediately is like, okay, get both of them with the cattle prods to the guards. Wesley holds a gun to Darren, tells him to call him off. And the door of the pit bursts open. All of the demons in Crib come in. Their cuffs are instantly, they're gone. Crib did the right thing. He goes up to Angel and he's like, give me your wrist, loser. I forgot to mention this earlier, but I thought it was very interesting, like Wesley handing the key, or not really handing, but offering the key to Crib and saying, I can help you, is very symbolic of what Angel was trying to do to Crib the entire episode. And he was offering a key. He was offering freedom to these guys. Right. And like them all choosing to come back in and save Angel and stuff. While Wesley helped them out with like giving them the physical key, Angel's the one who unlocked the desire to even be free in the first place. And I thought that was really cool.
And just to kind of go back to the fight sequence with Trepko's? Yeah. So I think it's just really interesting that the thing that kind of got Trepko's to reconsider was the fact that he was fighting an equal. Like this was a warrior to warrior type of fight where Trepko's, it was like a respect thing almost, where it's like, okay, this guy's willing to do what no one else has been willing to do. And he is fighting back with everything that he has. And I feel like for Trepko's, like he obviously is like a warrior, like from everything that we've seen about Trepko's, he's very strong. And I think for him, there's like a nobility in what Angel's doing that he respects. And I think that's what stops him from like delivering that killing blow, which is just super interesting because it kind of makes you think about like, you know, it wasn't freedom. It wasn't the fact that he was going to be free that like stopped him, or that, you know, it wasn't technically like Angel's words. It was Angel's actions. And I don't know. I just found that really interesting. Like even demons have that nobility. Mm-hmm. Like he feels that what Angel did was noble and like something that a warrior would do. So he could relate to that. And that's what stopped him. So I don't know. I really enjoyed that part.
Darren manages to get away from Wesley, but as he aims to shoot him, Cordelia comes and pushes him into the railing, into the pit with a metal stand. Once again, well done, Cordelia. Well done, Wesley. Ooh, what a Cordy. Fantastic team. Mm-hmm. Seriously. So now Darren is in the pit. Crib is supporting Angel. Darren points the gun at Trepkos and says, "You stupid slave, you had your 21, but you had to go and ruin it for everybody else." Crib grabs Darren, throws him at Trepkos. His Trepkos catch. Trepkos immediately just launches Darren, who now is wearing the cuff, into the stands, and he disintegrates, which I felt like was a very fitting end for that dude.
Yep.
And then as they walk back in, Crib and Trepkos help support Angel. And you have that really sweet moment where Trepkos says, "It was a good fight." And Angel says, "Yeah, I could have taken you.
I could have taken you." As he's falling over.
Yeah, exactly. Then we cut to Wesley and Cordelia supporting Angel between them as they walk out of the club. Angel's like, "It's a good thing you found me in time." Cordelia's like, "We weren't going to let anything happen to you." Wesley's like, "No." And then Cordelia's like, "Well, I mean, beyond the slavery and the severe beatings and stuff, Wesley came up with the key," which I love that she like gave Wesley credit, because I feel like that's the first time that she's actually done that. And I think that's so important, because while Angel has seen Wesley's usefulness, like we talked about that in what was it, the demon possession one, can never remember the title of that. I've got you under my skin. Yes, that's it, that's the one. I think that's the one where Angel was like, "Wow, Wesley, like, it not only useful, but I want to have him around." I think this one was important because Cordelia and Wesley needed to bond without Angel, and I think Cordelia's realizing, "Wow, like, Wesley actually is a really useful guy, but actually, like, we do well together." So I like that. Mm-hmm. And then in the last minute, they're like, "We did great. We set the captives free." And Cordelia's like, "What? Actually, didn't we just set a bunch of demons free?" Kind of like a full circle moment, the symmetry from the opening scene where they're looking up all the different types of demons. And they're like, "Wait a minute.
Demons.
Did we actually do some good here? Did we not?" But I will always stand by the fact that they did, because at the end of the day, the show's main message is free choice, right? They will have the choice now to choose good. And if they choose bad, Angel will come and get them.
Well, I think it just fits really well into like the morally gray vibe of the show. Like, these demons may have been the helpless, but that doesn't mean that they're good at the same time. So it's possible that, they just released a bunch of demons, but in the moment they were the helpless, right? Like, there was somebody of greater evil that was oppressing them. But it still doesn't make the demons good, because we don't really know much about these demons, right? Like, we don't know what they're going to do once they leave. Like, I'm pretty sure the last shot of like one of the demons is them like chuckling evilly.
Yeah, they're evil.
They, like, walk down the street. Like, these guys are going to go like be a menace now. Like, they're going to go like eat people. But so it's just kind of like this vicious cycle of like, oh, there's like the helpless, but there's also the evil people, but like the helpless can also be kind of evil. So it's like all of these choices that like Angel has to basically make the best choice that he has, which goes back to like what you were saying about the theme and stuff of choice, which is very fitting at the end of the day. So, you know, we'll see if some of these demons pop back up in the next few episodes. And Angel has to find them and kill them now that he's released them from captivity.
Right. No, but that is such a good point, Leia. And I hadn't even thought about that before. I mean, because we're talking about the complexity of the show. But at the end of the day, that is the heart of this show, is that there are consequences to the actions that we make. And that's life. The decision that you make in that moment might have been the best decision to make, but that doesn't mean that there aren't going to be negative consequences from that. That's just a part of life. There's never going to be a consequence, a positive or a negative consequence free decision. There's always going to be something that comes of whatever decision you make, but you're not responsible, or I won't say you're not responsible. You can't control that. You're only responsible for the decision you make here and now in this moment. And sometimes you truly are stuck between two impossible decisions, you know? Right. But this show has always valued and really has respected the decision to make those choices, whether they are good or bad.
And it's like, you could also say like, maybe some of these demons that Angel and them rescued are actually good and they deserve to be rescued, but then some of them are probably not. So you know, that's the whole, like, you know, Buffy's line of, you have a choice, not a good choice, but you have a choice. So I thought it was just, yeah, it's funny that, like, they bring that up at the end of the episode. Like, oh, did we just release a shit ton of demons? Yes.
Go but look we'll them up in the database.
Deal with that. We'll deal with that on, you know, another day. Another day, another problem, you know?
Right. Well, and I mean, like, they showed Trepkos versus Crib even as contrasts, where Crib is probably not a great guy. Like, he's probably going to go out and bully a bunch of other people. But they also showed him making a good choice in this episode. Right. Like, when push came to shove, like, he could have just taken off, but he chose to go help the others. And so I think that they're showing that even bad guys can make good choices too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, again, this episode is progressing that whole, like, morally gray aspect. And I feel like that's more realistic.
Like Buffy Summer said once, I like my men like I like my evil. Evil. Or no, what was it? No. Like Buffy Summer said once, I like my evil like I like my men. Evil.
Is that what she said? I don't remember now.
Yeah, she said that in Pangs.
I remember Pangs, but I don't remember the exact – yeah, I thought she was comparing it to, like, coffee, like, bitter, dark, and evil or something. Or is
no,
that just
she
in
was
head?
Talking about the, like, Native American spirit and how it's, like, she felt bad about having to go after it because, like,
yes,
you know.
That's right.
And she was like, I like my evil like I like my men. Evil, like –
that's right. She didn't like
forward.
She doesn't like the the whole morally grayness because she was wrestling with whether or not to kill the Native American spirit. Yes. Yeah. That whole thing. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. And I mean, if you like your morally gray, then continue to watch Angel, because this is only like the tip of the iceberg for what we're going to have to get into and talk about later on in some of these other seasons. Because and that's what makes these shows so good, is because sometimes there is no right or wrong answer. And sometimes you're going to watch the things that these characters do and you're going to go, I don't think that was the right decision, but I also don't know what the right decision would be in that. And I don't know that I can blame this character too much because I understand why. And I feel like those are just the best episodes and the best characters to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like watching the show, you really can't watch it from a lens of like moral superiority. Like, there really is no, like, there's no right way to view Angel the series, I think, morally, because it's so morally ambiguous in a lot of ways, because Angel is a morally ambiguous person, or character, sorry. But yeah, it makes me laugh when I, like, see discourse, you know, online and within, like, fandom spaces of people saying, oh, like, this person's better than this person because they did this better. But they're literally talking about, like, murder, or they're talking about, like, you know, how many people one person ate versus how many people the other person ate.
Oh, but he was just really sorry and sad and remorseful. Yeah. And it's like, but, you know, maybe he should deserve, like, he does deserve to die.
It's literally like, like, what are you comparing here, right? And it's like, you kind of have to put it into the perspective of, like, the show and the universe. And I feel like, yes, we can talk about things that are right and wrong and stuff, but I don't think that's the point ultimately. Like, we're not here to have a contest about who's more moral and who's better and who's more good and who's more bad and stuff like that. I think there's just, like, so many shades of gray here that are all, like, really valid. And that's what makes these characters interesting, and that's what makes these shows interesting, in my opinion. So,
agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why we decided to have a podcast, because of episodes and moments like this, because they're just fun to talk about. They're juicy. Juicy, along with Angel's arms and that juicy shirt. Angel.
Angel.
All right. Well, that was The Ring. Let us know your guys' thoughts on this. I'm honestly really curious to know, like, the general vibe or feeling that people get from this episode, if it is something that they do like, if they don't. I've been really, like, surprised as we've been going through, kind of, like, hearing from people about what episodes they like, what they don't like. I mean, it's just – it's interesting because it's almost impossible to predict what people like and don't, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, you guys definitely let us know your thoughts on this episode. What did you think of just the new introduction of demons as the victims? Because I don't really think we've seen that as clear cut as we have in this episode. What do you guys think of Lila Morgan?
Lila.
Are you excited to see her? Do you like her? I don't know. Let us know your thoughts. As always, guys, thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.